Joined by Foolish Baseball, we discuss some recent fan questions and make our predictions for the Hot Stove. I'm Ben C. Gisser, and this is World of Baseball. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 51 of the World of Baseball podcast. I am joined by Bailey from Foolish Baseball. Bailey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Ben C. Thank you for having me.
Of course, it is my pleasure having you. This is going to be an awesome episode. It is so exciting to have guests back on the podcast. There's been a couple episodes without guests. It's been kind of confusing based on time zone differences, but this offseason, I have a fantastic lineup of guests for the fans of the World of Baseball podcast, and it starts with Bailey from Foolish Baseball. So, Bailey, tell me a little bit about what you do in the baseball world. Tell me a little about the Foolish Baseball YouTube channel.
So, I'm an independent baseball YouTube content creator. I make YouTube videos about baseball, and specifically I make sort of this video essay type of series where I really break down different sort of sabermetric concepts and ideas that I felt like weren't being discussed on YouTube when I started. And the videos are usually about 15 minutes long, and they are included with those videos is a sort of 16-bit style graphics with artwork that I make and all these cool stat graphics that I put together, and it's called Baseball Bits.
And yeah, indeed, those are I can attest they're fantastic videos. I watch every single one that comes up, as should you guys, listeners of the World of Baseball podcast. So tell me how you started the YouTube channel.
Well, it started not doing what I was doing now. It started with me doing videos for the wonderful video game Out of the Park Baseball. Out of the Park Baseball is a GM/coach simulator type game. And I was a big fan of the series, but I felt like there wasn't enough videos of it on YouTube, and specifically tutorial videos. So that's where I started. And then once I was kind of done with that, I did move on to the type of video that made the channel popular, which would be the Baseball Bits video essay. And that, again, was just me. It was just me asking myself, well, what type of video would I want to watch on YouTube? What's not on YouTube that I myself would like to watch? And that's kind of where those initial ideas were born. You know, I really wanted to talk about stats and analytics in a way that was fun. And so I think the name, even Foolish Baseball, was sort of born out of that. I'd read Keith Law's book, Smart Baseball, and I wanted to make a version of that I felt was a little bit less self-congratulatory.
Absolutely. And you did that. If you look at your channel right now, you're at what, 140,000 subscribers on YouTube, multiple thousands of followers on Twitter. It's really taken off.
Yes, it has. I mean, it's turned into a full-time gig for me in the past year and a half or so. And it's been a blessing. It feels like, you know, I am doing what I was born to do.
That's absolutely awesome. That is really, really cool. With everything good comes challenges. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges that have been that you've stood up to while making this channel? Any challenges that you have had?
Well, you know, I think the pandemic was a big challenge for me this year. At times, I was trying to make content for a sport that hadn't had a competitive game in 9 months, and that's always going to be challenging. Threw some of my potential sponsors into haywire as well. So in the past, I'd been sponsored by SeatGeek, which is a ticket selling platform. Well, all of a sudden, there's no live events for them to advertise for in the first place. So I'm kind of left out in the cold there. So in 2020, it's been a challenging year, but it's also been still a very good year for the growth of the channel. But it's made me sort of, reassess, you know, how solid of a footing I have, you know, that I've been able to withstand these challenges and still kind of come out in a pretty good position. It hopefully bodes well for the future, even as I'm looking onward in the baseball landscape and I see, you know, labor unrest coming at the end of 2021.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely tough. At least for me, the pandemic was tough as well. When you don't have things going on in the game, it's really tough to produce content. You'd think with like the history that baseball has, just like, oh, endless history, you could really talk about anything, but it's really hard to put together content. At the time, I was just like asking fans for questions to be sent to the email so I could answer them to the best of my ability, literally having them feed the content to me. It's tough. The pandemic was absolutely tough on all baseball media platforms, and really just being able to get through that really just shows like the strength of your channel and of the baseball media world that has continued to push through even in this pandemic. With that being said, let's move on to some recent fan questions that were sent to the World of Baseball Podcast at gmail.com. If you want to hear your fan question answered on the World of Baseball Podcast, all you have to do is exactly that. Send it to worldofbaseballpodcast@gmail.com. I'm going to be asking Bailey from Foolish Baseball these questions because I have probably answered these questions a couple times before. I will obviously restate my opinion on them, but we're going to start with number one. Do you think Lindor will be traded this offseason? If so, where?
All right, so no hesitation here. Yes, he will be traded, I think. The reason I think that is that it does seem inevitable that he's going to be traded between now and the trade deadline in 2021. Why I would lean to him being traded in the offseason is simply because of the cost-cutting measures that are being implemented. I would call it austerity by the Cleveland's ownership. And I think that starts with them not even wanting to pay, you know, half of Lindor's, you know, arbitration, final year of arbitration, which is going to be, by their standards, relatively expensive. So I do think he will be moved during this offseason. And as to where his market seems to be, the New York teams would be interested. So both the Mets and the Yankees are going to be in on him. And I imagine that he ends up going to one of the New York teams, although I can't say for sure which one.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you on that. I think Francisco Lindor will be traded, which is tough for me to see as a Cleveland Indians fan. On the bright side, the middle infield prospects for the Cleveland Indians are stacked. So there are going to be good pieces in the future that may be able to replace him. But with that being said, you're losing a franchise piece, and it's really tough. I don't see how the Indians don't trade Lindor this offseason. They could get a pretty decent return for him. Might have gotten a better return if they had traded him at the trade deadline this year or at the beginning of last offseason. Clearly, it didn't do much help for the Indians to keep them. But in terms of where he'll go, I agree with you. Probably the New York Mets or the New York Yankees. Those teams are playing in strong markets. They're trying to win now, and he'd be a good one-year trade acquisition for them. Moving on to the next question from the fans. What under-the-radar free agent do you see making an impact next year?
Yeah, there's quite a few kind of big names out there as there are in every, you know, sort of free agency class. You know, so you could look at someone like a John Lester who might sign for like 1 year, $5 million, and you never know, maybe he has a big bounce back year. For me, I have a feeling it could be Andrelton Simmons. I'm a big Andrelton Simmons aficionado. I could see him, you know, if the Yankees don't get Lindor, I could see them going for someone like Simmons and trying to, you know, turn his career around to the extent that they did with like LeMahieu. So I think Andrelton Simmons, if he gets the right fit, if he can stay healthy, he can make a huge impact for a relatively cheap amount of money, I would imagine.
If I'm not mistaken, you made a video on Andrelton Simmons. I believe that was your channel, correct? The Hall of Fame case for him?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So evidently you're a big Andrelton Simmons fan. I'm also a huge Andrelton Simmons fan. He was probably my favorite player to watch defensively in the entire MLB. He's just got a cannon. He's an elite defensive shortstop. I think the Yankees could turn him into someone solid. That was not the guy I was thinking, but it is a good answer to that question. I think Corey Kluber is an under-the-radar guy who could make an impact. Obviously, it's dependent on if he stays healthy. Since he got injured, I believe in 2018, when he got hit in the comebacker in that game against the Miami Marlins, he really hasn't had a chance to play baseball at a high level. He's just been consistently injured. Assuming Corey Kluber is healthy, he could sign a short-term deal on a team for not that much money and maybe be an effective piece in a starting rotation. We're yet to see if he's going to be able to remain healthy, but if he does, he's a Cy Young caliber pitcher, and he has shown no indication that he's done, because when he's pitched, he's still been really solid.
Yeah, there's just no telling with him. You know, like you've said, that he just hasn't played very much at all in the past couple of years.
Right, you'd have to see a little more of him in order to be able to predict, but obviously he could be an interesting piece for any team, maybe looking to win as a 4 or 5 guy in a rotation. Moving on to the third fan question that we are going to talk about, how do you feel about the 16-team playoff bracket? Should the MLB keep it?
I disagree with it. I think we got lucky and have actually gotten lucky overall in the past 5 or 6 years, where the randomness of playoff baseball hasn't reared its head as much lately. So for example, last year, you know, we felt like when we got to the end, the best team in the National League was facing off against the best team in the American League. And that's in spite of the fact that the playoff system did everything it could to not have that be true. But
exactly.
I would disagree. I would say if you want to talk about 16 playoff teams, you would first have to talk about expansion. Or I think, you know, even 12, you might want to talk about expansion. in terms of the number of franchises total. So I know, I mean, I pointed this out in my most recent video. If that system were in play in, say, 2019, that would mean like the 78 and 84 Texas Rangers would be a playoff team. And that's just not playoff quality baseball in my mind.
Right, and absolutely. You have to be a team that's going to win in order to be in the playoffs. There is probably a median. I would say there would be a 12-team playoff. I'd probably be okay with that. Just a kind of follow-up question to that. Do you think the wild card should be a series instead of a single game?
Yes. Based off of what I saw this past October, I actually really enjoyed the best of three series. I think, you know, the wild card game's great from a spectator perspective because the stakes are just so unbelievably high. But I really did feel like those series where you're trying to take two out of three, they retained a lot of the urgency that the wild card game has while also ultimately being more fair. So I would say yes. I'd prefer it to be a best of three series, ideally.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that one. I don't see how, at least for me, I'm a very strong advocate for the fact that the wild card series should be more, at least three games. I don't see how a season that's 162 games can be decided by one for some team. I think if you're in that playoffs, if you're in those 10 teams that make the playoffs, you're already in an elite group of teams, and you should be given a fair chance to show your team's depth in a playoff series, even if it's only three games. That's my opinion on that. Moving on to question number four of the recent fan questions. Should the National League adopt the designated hitter rule?
Yes, I think so. I grew up a fan of a National League franchise, the Braves, and I've grown accustomed to the National League style of play where the pitcher hits. However, based on what I saw this past season, we're not really missing much, you know. I wouldn't necessarily, you know, say it's far better or far worse baseball, but it's not something I'm going to get angry about. And it's also just inevitable that universal DH will be adopted. In fact, I think we should have just agreed to adopt it now, because when you look at the free agency cases of guys, like whether it be a Marcell Ozuna departing the Braves potentially, or Nelson Cruz being open to being signed by National League teams, you would almost want to know, you know, the long-term fate of the DH and the National League before teams make these decisions about players who are primarily going to be best served as designated hitters.
Right, I totally agree with that. It's hard to see. Like, it doesn't really make much of a difference in my eyes, but I think it'd be cool to see a consistency in rules in regards to both leagues. The DH and the NL wouldn't really hurt the NL so much. If anything, I think it'd help it in the slightest, and it would obviously it open up free agent signings for Nelson Cruz, who's not going to play defense at age 40. He's not going to play on a single National League team because they're not going to adopt the designated hitter. It's going to be interesting to see what the MLB decides about that in the coming years. I personally think that they'll revert to it. I think they'll go back to the designated hitter. I think there's added pressure coming from fans, the younger generation of fans, to adopt the DH in the National League, and I think that'll happen.
I do too.
I think it's just a matter of time. You just mentioned that you're an Atlanta Braves fan. I just want to say you have a lot to look forward to. You have a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, well, hopefully that includes Marcell Ozuna hitting DH for them next year.
Right, yeah. Well, I guess we'll just have to see about that. Moving right along in this episode of the World of Baseball podcast, we're going to be discussing our hot stove predictions, starting with one of the top free agents in the league, George Springer. Where do you think he'll go?
Yeah, so I hadn't put too much thought into this one, but I did a free agency draft that included a good friend of mine, Jeremy Frank, at MLB Random Stats on Twitter, name drop.
He's actually coming on the podcast.
Okay, wonderful. Jeremy said that he thought Springer was going to go to the White Sox, and I liked it so much that I'm just going to agree with him. I don't know how much they'll be looking to spend after they already spent pretty big last offseason, but yeah, if they just want to kind of throw in the towel on Mazzara, if they add Springer to that lineup, that's a pretty scary lineup.
Absolutely. I have him going there too. That outfield will be ridiculously stacked with George Springer there. He might be the only big name they take off the board, but he'd be a good big name for them to take. I see him helping the outfield defensively. He could be a good middle of the order bat, maybe top of the order bat, just to help this team push them over the edge. In my opinion, the White Sox are the strongest team in the Central moving into 2021. So George Springer on that team just makes them that much stronger. I think we'll get a deal probably 4 to 5 years there, like 100 to 120 million. I don't know. It'd be a good deal for the Chicago White Sox, definitely. Moving on to the next guy, JT Realmuto. I believe he's going to go to the New York Mets. Steve Cohen, new owner of the New York Mets. He has a lot of cash. JT Realmuto wants a lot of cash, and the Mets need a catcher. It just seems like a perfect fit. How about you?
I think that's a pretty good guess. First of all, I think JT Realmuto is the best free agent, period. I think he's just an unbelievable player. I think his career trajectory has shown that he continues to get a little bit better every year. I think part of that is that he only adopted the catcher position once he turned pro. So he doesn't quite have some of the wear and tear that lifelong catchers have. I think the Mets is a good pick. I could see a Yankees going for them if they're ready to move on from Sanchez. And I could also see sort of a surprise team going for him, because I think with Realmuto, and this goes for, you know, Bauer as well, but the market for these guys is basically any team that's willing to spend, because, you know, who has a better catcher than JT Realmuto right now? And the answer, I think, is nobody.
Yeah, absolutely. He's basically, according to everyone, the best catcher in the MLB. And yeah, he could really go to a lot of places. Any team that's looking for a catcher really has a shot at this guy. It's going to be interesting to see where he goes. It's cool you say that he's the best free agent out there. I never really thought of him as the best guy out there, but for a catcher, just the offensive ability that he has, the ability to work a pitching staff. And I didn't even know that I did not know that he only became a catcher when he turned pro, which is also interesting.
Yes.
And would explain why he gets better, which is really, really cool. Moving on to the third free agent on this list, Trevor Bauer, where you got him going?
Trevor Bauer, you know, I think I see the Angels Twitter lobbying for him a lot, and it does make sense. I'm not sure if I'm 100% swayed, but if you ask me today, I think the Los Angeles Angels would be a good fit for Trevor Bauer.
Absolutely. The Angels are a team that's looking for pitching depth, and they've struggled to have it over the years. Obviously, the tragedy with Tyler Skaggs, that kind of put a nail into their depth and really made them struggle. They had Julio Teheran and Dylan Bundy they acquired in free agency, but those aren't elite level starters. Trevor Bauer could go there. I could see that. Honestly, based on the way Trevor Bauer acts, I could see him going to any team in the MLB.
Right. Well, he said he's entertaining NPB offers as well. So
right. He's playing in Japan next year. Imagine how ridiculous that would be, seeing him playing in the NPB. That would just be insane.
Yeah, he'd be like the second worst YouTube thing to happen to Japan after Logan Paul.
Right, exactly. He'd dominate that league. It'd be absolutely insane. In terms of where I have Trevor Bauer going, I say the San Diego Padres. That's a team looking to grow. They have money to spend. They have a really young core. Mike Clevinger's in that rotation right now. He's very close with Mike Clevinger. I think it'd be really, really cool. Even if he might not go to the Padres, I think it'd be super awesome to see him go pitch in San Diego. He'd fit that young team really well. He could help work on those other pitchers. As we know, he really helped Shane Bieber grow into the pitcher that he is right now. And look where that took him. He obviously won the Cy Young last night. It's pretty ridiculous to see what Trevor Bauer does to organizations, and I think he'd fit in really well with San Diego.
Yeah, I know. I think that's a great fit. I hesitate on that just because I feel like in some ways them adding Clevinger perhaps actually lessened the chance that they also add Bauer, but we'll see.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would make sense. But it'd still be pretty awesome to see that. Moving on to our fourth guy that we have on this list, DJ LeMahieu, who is my favorite player in Major League Baseball. When I played high school baseball, I wanted to be like DJ LeMahieu. I was not successful in that endeavor. But DJ LeMahieu, easily my favorite player in the MLB. I think he's going to re-sign in New York. I think he's going to re-sign in New York. He hit tremendously well there. It kind of reinvented him as a player. It put him in a better career situation where he can make a lot of money. Right now, he's a versatile player the New York Yankees could use. He's healthy. And I think he could sign for another 3 to 4 years in New York, honestly. He just fits really well in New York, and I can't see them moving him. I think they're going to do whatever they can to get him back.
Yeah, I personally would like to see them re-sign him. It's possible that, you know, New York gets so in love with the idea of acquiring Lindor that he becomes more expendable in terms of just, you know, one infielder's got to go. If he does leave New York, a club that I do think would be a good fit for him would be the St. Louis Cardinals. I could see him being basically this Colton Wong upgrade. They know they need bats, and who better to add to a team than DJ LeMahieu? I mean, unbelievable ball player. Over the last couple of years, you know, he's been basically this MVP-type player.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't even think of St. Louis on that list. That's eye-opening. He could fit really well there. I forgot the fact that they had let Colton Wong go. What do you feel about that, by the way, Colton Wong being released from St. Louis?
Yeah, it's it's we I feel like we had like a smaller version of it. It's much smaller, but when the White Sox non-tendered, was it the White Sox that did that? Yomer Sanchez. We had like this Gold Glove caliber second baseman who gets non-tendered, and I think with Wong, you know, he could still come back to St. Louis, but it is very telling of the kind of market we're in for these guys. Honestly, Wong, to be honest, would be a good fit in Cleveland, possibly, if they want to add another middle infielder with Lindor gone.
Absolutely. I think if they don't bring back Cesar Hernandez, they might have to go get a second baseman anyway.
Right, yeah.
So you know, that could be an intriguing option. Moving on to our next guy, Marcell Ozuna. You obviously want him back with the Braves, but where do you think he'll go?
That's a tough one because my heart says Braves, right? My heart says Braves, and he'll sign for, you know, absolutely, 470 or something like that. If these questions about the DH in the National League remain, then I think his market trends more towards the American League. In that case, you know, I would honestly look for an up-and-coming team potentially making a splash signing with on him. That could be even a team like Detroit, you know, that just really, really wants bats. You know, that he has some options because of his age. You know, a team that signs him, you know, now when he's 30, you know, you can still have him when he's 33, 34, still producing at a high level.
Right, yeah, no doubt. It's all, in all likeliness, he could be moved towards the American League, especially with the DH rule leaving. I could see him in a place like Toronto.
Yeah,
at least for me, I could see him there. Assuming they could put Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at third base, if he's good enough to play there defensively, they could DH him, and that would be a strong guy to have. They're looking to have a competitive playoff season in the next year or two, and signing Marcell Ozuna for 3 to 4 years could really help them with that. He's an elite offensive bat. And he really showed it this year, and I think he'll continue to perform at that high level.
Yeah, like you said, a lot of it hinges on that ability to move Guerrero to third successfully, because if not, you know, Toronto already has so many first base DH types to begin with.
Right, yeah, no doubt. Apparently Guerrero shed a lot of weight, so he should be in good shape to play third base. But we'll see what happens. That Toronto infield is just going to be stacked in a couple of years. It's already stacked. But it is going to be insane. Marcell Ozuna, like in year 3 or 4 of his contract, if he were to sign a 4-year deal in Toronto, would just help that. Moving on to Charlie Morton. Now, I had originally said New York Mets because I wrote down my answers to these before Marcus Stroman accepted their qualifying offer. I'm going to say Charlie Morton heads to the Angels. They're looking for a quality starting pitcher to push them into a competitive balance, trying to push them towards the upper edges of that division, maybe slide into a wild card spot. I don't think they'll take up the Dodgers, but I think Charlie Morton could make a 2-year contract in the Los Angeles Angels. I think he'll pitch well there. I also think there's a chance that he could go back to Tampa Bay, but I think that's less likely than him going to another team. What do you got?
Yeah, it's tough to read because Morton's a guy who's even talked about retiring, and you know, if not retiring, he really liked pitching in Tampa. So, you know, I don't know if he can be swayed to certain markets, and I don't really know what's going on in his head. I really liked the Mets fit as well. In fact, I picked him to go to the Mets before that Stroman news broke, and then I kind of reconsidered it. I don't know. He could still end up going back to Tampa. I would also throw out, you know, as far as an up-and-coming team that could still, you know, probably sign him to like a 1-year deal or a 2-year deal max, Miami. Why not? If he likes Florida so much, you know, Miami's on the climb, clearly. They've got a lot of great pitching already, but if you have a chance to add Charlie Morton on a 1-year deal, there's really no such thing as a bad 1-year deal. I would look for him to stay in Florida if he really wants to.
Even as a mentor for those young guys, I mean, I love watching the Miami Marlins. You made a great video about it recently, by the way, just like watching their young pitching staff go. I feel like that staff's going to be crazy good in a couple of years. And just even as a mentor, seeing Charlie Morton go there would be really interesting. Moving on to the next guy we have on this list, Marcus Stroman. He accepted the qualifying offer with the New York Mets. What do you think about that?
I think it was a good move by Stroman and the Mets. I think mutually it was a good idea. Stroman has been consistently a really good performer throughout his career. I would expect that to continue in 2021. And if he can put together a good, solid full season instead of, you know, what happened, you know, during this pandemic year where it was going to be shortened anyways, and then he opted out. If he can do that, he can raise his stock for free agency going in you know, after the 2021 season, while also, you know, helping the Mets win potentially.
Yeah, the Mets could be a competitive team this year. And it's definitely a safe deal for Marcus Stroman when you look at it, at least my take on it. You don't know how much money is going to be floating around the free agent market this year. It's definitely not going to be as much as there is available for a solid starting pitcher in previous years. So he's playing it safe. He got a solid qualifying offer from the New York Mets, and he took it. I don't see anything wrong with what Marcus Stroman did there. I think it was a good move by him. Moving on to the next guy, we have Nelson Cruz, the 40-year-old super slugger for the Minnesota Twins. I think they're going to keep him. He's hit well in Minnesota. I don't see him signing anywhere else. They like him in Minnesota. He helps their offense a lot. I think he'll go for another one-year deal of like $15 million, $12 to $15 million. What do you think?
Yeah, so Cruz right now is lobbying for the two-year deal, and I think it just becomes a question of if he's going to get that, you know, whether it be in Minnesota or elsewhere. I, you know, if I were running a ball club now, particularly an American League ball club, you know, I'd be – the way he's hit over the last, you know, couple years – despite his age, I would be totally willing to give him that two-year deal. However, if he's unable to get that, then Minnesota becomes the obvious landing spot. And it's also possible Minnesota, wanting to remain competitive for Cruz, would end up offering him 2 years to begin with. But yeah, so I think Minnesota's his most likely destination no matter what.
Right, yeah, no matter what situation happens, Nelson Cruz will most likely end up in Minnesota. It'd be cool to see him back. I really don't like the Minnesota Twins because they always beat my Indians. But and Nelson Cruz is obviously a big part of that, but he hit really well in Minnesota, and I think he likes it there. So I'd see that I could see him trying to stay there. We were going to the next guy, Justin Turner, of formerly, well, maybe in the future too, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Where do you have him going?
Yeah, back to the Dodgers is kind of the one that comes to mind. I imagine Turner's probably in line for like a 2 year deal. As far as potential suitors for him, if it's not in LA, you know, I almost think it would be interesting if he did go back to the Mets. That's something I've been thinking about. It'd be sneaky. They'd have to rearrange some guys positionally. But, you know, if there was mutual interest there, I think Justin Turner on the Mets would be actually a really interesting fit.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see. I think he'll also go back to the Dodgers. Seeing him on the Mets, though, is really interesting. They really have to shift guys around. Right now they have J.D. Davis playing third base. I think they'd have to move him to the outfield again.
Yeah, well, the McNeil, too, would be, you know, McNeil's ideal position is probably third base. So, yeah. And then the other, you know, if you want to look at the NL East as well, another interesting spot could be even Washington.
Oh,
because I think Washington is going to spend this offseason. I think they'll sign at least someone interesting. Like, maybe they'll sign someone we've talked about so far.
And going back.
People aren't thinking about them in that capacity, but the Learners have shown a willingness to spend. You know, they effectively saved money by not re-signing Rendon. So, you know, if Kibum's not, you know, their immediate answer at third base and they're still in that win now mode, then maybe they do try to get a third baseman.
Right. It's a huge year for the Nationals. They have to decide whether they're going to go into a soft rebuild and stick with their starting pitching or if they're going to go hard for a championship. If they're going to go hard for another championship, Justin Turner seems like a good option to put at third base. Moving on to our next guy, Marcus Semien. I think he's going to stay in Oakland because of the down year he had. He had an MVP caliber season 2 years ago, and last year he just struggled. He had a very bad season, and I think he'll stay in Oakland on a one-year deal, maybe raise his value again so he can get back out onto the market and make more money on another team. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Marcus Semien's probably an ideal one-year deal candidate, just given what's happened to him the past couple of years, going from, you know, like a third-place MVP finisher to a guy who really wasn't a huge factor. Obviously, he could do that in Oakland. He could do that in a couple other places as well. I'm sure some teams will be willing to offer him two- or three-year deals, but the more I think about it, the more 1 year in Oakland makes the most sense.
It'd be interesting to see if the Indians do trade Lindor. He could be an option for them for the infield for them.
Oh, he could be an option for, you know, the Angels or the Yankees even. I mean, it just depends on how infatuated they are with him.
100%, right. And there's always that hope that he could have that great season. And all of a sudden, you get yourself a player way better for probably cheap because of the season.
Right.
It would be very interesting to see. Moving on to the next guy on this list, Liam Hendricks. Where do you have him going?
Yeah, Liam Hendricks, you know, the thing about great relief pitching is that, you know, he can pretty much go anywhere, right? Like, even teams with stacked bullpens are still looking to add guys that are of Liam Hendricks's quality. So a team that we haven't said so far is the Houston Astros. So I'm going to say the Houston Astros. Their bullpen has been tested over the past year or so. They had a pretty great bullpen in 2019. Will Harris walked. Joe Smith ended up sitting out. They had all kinds of pitching injuries that was shuttling guys between the bullpen and the rotation. If they added a Liam Hendricks type, even with Roberto Osuna there, I do think that would be a big add for them.
Yeah, that'd be a strong back end of that bullpen, no doubt. And as you said, with relievers, they really, really could go anywhere because everyone's looking for relievers all the time. I personally think he's going to sign with the Philadelphia Phillies. They really need bullpen help. Their bullpen is terrible. It was like the worst bullpen in the MLB since like at least in 50 years, probably longer. I don't know if you know the statistics on that.
Yeah. It's actually since integration, the highest ERA. Since integration. So 70 years.
70 years. You're looking at the highest bullpen ERA in 70 years. If there's any team, I don't know. Maybe my prediction for this is not where he'll sign, but who should sign him. Maybe the Phillies won't go after a guy like Liam Hendricks, but at the same time, they should, because anyone who can help that bullpen, just anyone, I think he'd be a great option for the Phillies. Maybe take that ERA down by an entire point or two, honestly.
I mean, it's even with the Phillies, you almost ask yourself, you know, it's like if they sign Hendricks, the job is hardly done, you know? So it's almost like you want to sign maybe a bunch of flyer guys for $1 or $2 million and hope at least some of them are good, you know?
Right, right. Like, they just have to go through every single reliever on free agency right now and maybe test the water with them, see if they'll be able to sign. Because if they have a good bullpen, then it changes that team. This team is like vastly underperformed and they could look very different with a strong bullpen. And moving on to the last guy we have on this list of the best free agents. If someone was left off of this list, you can send an email to the World of Baseball Podcast at gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter and I will answer where I think he will go. Maybe Foolish Baseball will tag along. Who knows? Masahiro Tanaka is the last guy on this list. I think he's going to stay in New York. He's a true Yankee. They love him in New York. Mm-hmm. He's an experienced starting pitcher. He could sign a one-year deal in New York, and he'd be totally okay with that, and they'd be okay with it too. It won't hurt their starting rotation at all.
Yeah, the crossroads that Tanaka is at reminds me a bit of Bumgarner last year, actually. It was different because, of course, the Yankees and the Giants are at completely different moments, competitively speaking. But in terms of what these guys have accomplished in their careers, their at times, you know, wonderful playoff records as well. But also, you know, questions about just how good a pitcher they are, you know, generally, and how much money it's going to cost to keep them. I think Tanaka's kind of in a similar situation to Bumgarner. What happened is Bumgarner ended up going to Arizona. I would actually kind of lean towards Tanaka leaving and going to a team like Toronto. I think that would be a really good fit for him. Toronto could really just use another pitcher like Tanaka, which is going to be a guy who's going to give you consistent innings. They've got a lot of young arms over there, but you know, if you have young arms like that, you want to supplement them with good veteran guys like Tanaka and like Ryu, who they already have.
Absolutely. If he was put in the Toronto Blue Jays rotation, he'd definitely help out. They're relying right now on a strong Nate Pearson season and Hwangjin Ryu doing what he did this year to anchor this rotation. Tanaka would definitely help. I don't know if I could see him going to Toronto. I'm not entirely sure. But it's true, I could see him leaving New York. But in the end, I'm pretty sure Masahiro Tanaka is going to stay. And with that, that concludes the discussion of the free agents. That concludes the discussion of the recent fan questions. So, Bailey, thank you so much for coming on the World of Baseball Podcast. Hope you enjoyed. I had a great time talking about baseball.
All right. Had a great time. Thank you so much, Bincy.
Of course. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
If you like what you're hearing from the World of Baseball Podcast, please consider supporting. The link is in the podcast description. Thank you so much and have a good day.